David, can you tell me a little bit, please, about Genome Alberta? What is the organization?
Genome Alberta is one of six genome centers located across Canada, and we work in partnership with Genome Canada. We're the youngest. We were formed in 2005, late in 2005, and I started here as the first permanent CEO and president in early in 2006.
So you've had a lot of longevity.
I have. I'm the longest serving CEO of anybody in the current genome family in Canada, but I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, and I think there's even more great things to come with genomics technologies and its applications.
Well, certainly things have advanced over the last decade or so. What really is genomics?
Genomics is really looking at your DNA, or DNA of any biological specimen, and saying, you know, how is it shaped by the environment and the influences around it? And so it's the expression of all your genetic material. And obviously that varies dramatically depending on your physical environment. It can be nutritional environment, and many factors play a role in modifying the expression.
Now, Genome Canada has announced just before Christmas a whole bunch of money that it's giving out for a number of different projects, I believe in the order of $110 million. And Genome Alberta is benefiting from about $35 million of that. What are some of the projects that you're working on?
Yes, this was really our best showing in 10 years, Cheryl. Our best performance as a province in attracting national funding to Alberta for genomics-led initiatives. There were four projects that were approved for over 30% of the federal dollars available. And I'll just give you a quick rundown on the four of them. One is on microbial genomics for oil spill preparations in the Canadian Arctic. And the reason for that is that, you know, with global warming, we have reduced sea ice cover and ice-free summers happening through the Northwest Passage. And that's leading to much greater activity, shipping activity up there. And associated with that is potential for greater risk, an accident or a spill. And we need to be prepared for that. So this project led by the University of Calgary with partners at University of Manitoba and with Environment Canada are looking at how do we map the diversity that's there today and prepare for a potential spill in the Arctic and therefore be able to more quickly go in and remediate and deal with the problem. So that's the first project. Second one is related energy type project, energy environment. It's managing microbial corrosion in Canadian offshore and onshore oil production. And, you know, if you've been listening to the news for the last several years, one of the major problems in moving energy in the form of oil or bitumen is the corrosion in the pipelines, and they're leading to spills. And the big factor in that is the microbial community that's actually breaking down the material and allowing that seepage to happen and with devastating effects. And this is a very interesting and timely project, again, led by University of Calgary, but with involvement at University of Alberta and Memorial University, because it is both onshore and offshore. And that microbial-induced corrosion is a huge topic globally, not just here, but the expertise exists here in Canada and principally in Alberta and Newfoundland, and we're very pleased to have that type of project supported, and I think real applications are going to come from this information.
So we could look at that in detail in a moment, but what are the other two projects?
So the other two, one is a systems biology approach to chronic wasting disease. Chronic wasting is a prion-related misfolding protein disease that's in elk and deer and moose and caribou. And it's very similar to mad cow disease in cattle and CJD in humans. And so that's the third project. And the fourth project is resilient forests, climate pests and policy and genomic applications led by the University of Alberta and University of British Columbia. And that's really dealing with the impact of climate change and trees not being able to adapt so rapidly and what is the stress load on them, including not just heat or drought stresses, but also insect populations that also can have a very rapid movement through a forest. And as you've seen with other species such as mountain pine beetle.
Can Can you give me some more detail about this particular project and what it means for Alberta?
Yes, so this project is focusing on spruce trees, which is, you know, Canada's most significant forest resource. And these projects are successful because of prior investments in each one of these areas here by this province and by the federal government. So in all cases, it wasn't that just this is a brand new area. This is an area that is really a priority topic for our province. We built infrastructure, attracted the expertise or trained them, and now we're successful in bidding on these huge national projects. I mean, when you get over 30% of the federal dollars for this one province, it's a really amazing feat. Not likely one that we're going to repeat again very soon, but it just shows you that these long-term commitments to funding priority topics are really critical, and I can get into the detail on them. So this particular forest-related project, these threats to our forest and the community are very real, and spruce budburn being one of those particular examples. Emerald ash borer is another one, and mountain pine beetle and the devastation effects it's had. Those are all major issues that we now have technologies that can try to come in and mitigate, reduce, or anticipate where the next outbreak's going to be and allow companies and governments to get people in place in advance of that and on the ground and deal with the problem much more quickly. And that takes a whole host of information and data analysis to anticipate and predict where that outbreak might be and how do you come in and mitigate or interfere with that particular destructive element that's happening.
And in terms of climate change, I get the idea that things are happening a lot faster than people might have anticipated. Is that correct?
In certain areas, yes. And not all of climate change is bad. You know, in some places it's beneficial. There's a warming trend and could be increased growing capacity and longer growing seasons in certain areas. But you have to possibly trade that off against more erratic weather patterns and, you know, things like that. And on a day like when it's minus 20 is our high today, we often question whether climate change is really happening. But if you look at the data, it certainly is over long term. And this is just a little blip, as we know.
Well, let's look at the two projects that deal with oil and oil spills and the marine environment and the Arctic. So what exactly is it that these researchers are going to be looking at?
Well, what they're trying to investigate is to generate really credible science-based evidence on the role and potential of bioremediation in a cold water environment. You know, we know about the Gulf Coast off Mexico, the oil spill that happened there a few years ago, and that really got cleaned up fairly quickly based on inherent microbial communities that were already present there. And when a nitrogen source really was made available through the oil that was spilled, populations really expanded quickly and dealt with that. But that's a much warmer environment. Now, what would happen in a much, much colder environment if we had the same problem in an oil spill or a diesel spill or something of that magnitude? And the answer is that we need to get the data to show us how to handle that in such a cold environment. And I think this is a great project to do that because it's looking at what is there today before there's any major spills and therefore mapping that diversity. And now if you talk about bioremediation, you're usually trying to bring it back to after a spill to what it was before. Well, this will at least have the evidence of what was there before. And so it's really a twofold approach. It's looking at what's there and how do we bioremediate when we need to, and then how do we get back to what we had in the beginning.
What do you see as being perhaps further applications of what comes out of these research projects?
I really see the results of that being reduced oil spills and improved asset integrity, really with a bit of understanding of what the material, the pipeline material, needs to be made out of or coated with in order to reduce the microbial buildup that results in degradation of the pipeline. So reducing the overall cost of spillage, reducing the impact on the environment, and improving operator efficiencies in the system, and better, I guess, buy-in from the public that this is really an important topic, and it is being seriously looked at and addressed by very hardworking, intelligent individuals that are focused on this problem.
All of these projects have a fair number of partners, and you have mentioned earlier that certainly the government of Alberta has participated. So what is the involvement, I guess, of money that's coming from Alberta?
Well, many different partners, and I mean, we talked about this getting 30-some percent of the federal dollars, but all of those dollars have to be matched at least 1-to-1 or not 2-to-1 by Alberta and companies, by other partners, I guess. So the Alberta government, through the department we work closely with, EDT, or groups such as Alberta Innovates or Alberta Prion Research Institute, very actively involved in helping put together these proposals. I mean, companies are always at the table with us on these. We need the end user to be present and make sure that we stay focused on addressing what the problem is, and that they are there to say this is how they can apply that solution in a timely manner. So, I mean, that's the partnership. It's really a triple P approach, public-private partnership here that makes it work for us in this province.
How much further down the road before you see some results from these?
Well, we say these are four-year projects, and we really don't want to anticipate what the outcomes results are going to be without having the data in front of us. In most cases, we start to see results fairly quickly, within a year, year and a half, once the teams are up and running. And so we'll start to get early indications, and really the principal investigators will be the ones to speak to about that, because they know their data, and we'll be, I'm sure, happy to talk with you, Cheryl, in the future about this, and we'll stay in touch about it, make sure that breakthroughs that come from these projects, we'll make them available to you.
Thank you very much, David.
Well, thank you.